Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's beunique.org.
All right. Hi, my name is Tony Taylor, and we are here with Be Unique's Unscripted. I am with the incredibly talented Jason Stewart, director, comedian, and actor. And tonight we'll be discussing Jason's movies, his stand-up, and his directing, and his movie making with his shorts and web series. So, Jason, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, and so nice of you to say that. I'm not directing. I'm the producer of the web series Smothered. I produce it, and I co-produce it with my partner on it, Mitch Hara, who I was just talking to on the phone. We're in pre-production for season two, so this is sort of pretty cool. And it's so sweet of you to say that. I've directed a couple things, but not this thing particularly.
Yes, and I was looking at that, and we were.
I like to give credit where credit's due, you know.
Exactly. Well, listen, there's two things I must confess to you first off as we start out the show.
Sure.
The first one is this is the first time I've hosted this show, and don't be nervous. Please don't be nervous. Those work release programs really are something here in Florida. And second of all, like I told you earlier, we are not restricted in what we need to say or what we can say because we're not FCC guidelined.
Well, just ask me whatever you want. Anything you want to ask, and I'll answer it.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that. It's great.
So I'm your first show. Wow.
It is, and I hope you're not scared.
Not at all. I've done it all.
Well, you know, I figure, Jason, I got a 50-50 chance. You know, I can either really suck or it can go well. And, you know, let's root for the going well. But I got to tell you something. First off, before we start, I know you're on the West Coast. I am in Orlando, Florida. And when I was looking over some of the comedic stand-ups you've done, you had one in particular that I thought was fucking hilarious. And if you don't mind, I'd like to play it, and I hope it turns out okay. But this was you, and I think it's way back. Talking about Gay Day at Disney. So let's go.
Oh, wow, that was a while ago, yeah.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit of that.
Cool.
Maybe.
Man, I have been everywhere this year. I really have. I was in Florida. I did a big show for Gay Day in Disney World. I'm not kidding. They actually put a sign out front that said, gay people will be here today. Please don't feed them. Everyone's gay there. Please. Mickey, Minnie, same person. He does drag. Come on, the images of all these Disney movies for your kids, are they any good? Come on. There's the Beauty and the Beast, the Aladdin, that little fucking obsessive mermaid. What does that tell your kids? If you're beautiful, white, and Protestant, you have a 45-inch bust, a little 2-inch waist, you get to fall in love. Otherwise, honey, you're a big, fat, dancing clock. That's what you are. Or you're a spoon that goes swish. Or you're a candlestick. The only place I want a candlestick is on his nightstand. And yeah, I look at him and I'm a hungry jack. I'm having a Brokeback moment, baby. Don't quit me. And you know what's interesting about the Disney movies? There is one Disney movie that I really liked a lot, and that was Tarzan and the Ape Man. Big buff guy, sexy. Have you seen him? Is it wrong to want to have sex with a cartoon? You know, there's a bunch of gay guys in animation going, how far can we go till the parents notice?
Hey, Jason, that is fucking hilarious.
I forgot about that bit. I should bring that back. It's really funny.
Oh, man. Oh, Jason, man, let me tell you something. As an ex-Disney employee that was around during that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right when I was in college. And, you really visited Disney World, right? You were out there?
Yeah,
Disney
I did
World?
A big show there for Gay Day. And it's so funny. It's one of the only places I got stiffed. The two guys that were producing the show was in this big, big hangar, you know, and I guess my first joke is I love a stage you can land a plane in.
And they stiffed you the cash they were supposed to pay for the bit?
No, the producers who did it, they actually just, they didn't have anything to do with Disneyland or anything like that. They were independent producers, and they just left after.
Oh, my God.
I don't know whether it was before the show or after the show. I can't remember. It was a lot of years ago.
Well, I got to tell you, man, like I said, as an ex-Disney employee, I was working out there during Gay Days, and it was so funny because, you know, the parents would walk around with their kids, and as soon as the red shirts would come out that said on the front of it, it was like, magic by day, pleasure by night. And they would walk around, and they'd hold their hands over their kids' eyes. You gotta be kidding me. But it brought back a lot of memories, and I heard that, and I just was floored because I remember that time. And good for you. That was funny. Thank you for humoring me on that. I appreciate it.
No, not at all. Thanks for playing. I didn't know that one was still out there.
Oh yeah. Well, it was funny. It was just, you know, I came to that, and I'm like, yeah, here we are in Orlando, Florida, Disney, blah, 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 you know, and I tell you, you know, it's funny you said you got stiffed at Disney. Now, I know it wasn't Disney that did that, but, you know, Disney is a very, very tight company. So, anyway, but listen, I wanted to talk to you. You are multifaceted. I got to tell you, I was looking at your resume, and starting in 1984 with that movie Lost Empires. Do you know what you're listed as? You know what your part
No.
is? You know what you're called in that show?
Gay dude. Yes, that was it. That was me. I was gay dude. Oh, yeah, and it was really, at the time I was in the closet, and I didn't want anybody to know I was gay, you know, at all. So it was really sort of scary at the time. And I wanted to be in a movie, and I only had one or two other credits. My first credit was I played a high school ping pong player who was high on marijuana, sort of a Sean Penn Fast Times at Ridgemont High kind of character. Talk like this dude, you know, that kind of thing. And then I had done a children's show on the Nickelodeon called Out of Control, and I played a butler to a dog. And those were my credits. So other than extra work, I played a student on One Day at a Time. That's how I got my union card.
Wow.
And I had a silent bit where I ran to a door and had to slam it so this girl couldn't get in. And I slammed it so hard the molding came off. I was so nervous. But when I got Gay Dude, I was called Gay Dude Number One. My first line in a movie was, give me back my purse. I played a guy in the star, the lead of the film, got mugged, and it was so degrading. Honestly, the reason it was is because when I got there, the director had told me to wear a blousy shirt, and I got, he said, oh, this is not going to work. We need to get him something tight and an ascot. And I thought, oh, my God. I looked at him. I said, look, I'm not Thurston Howell III. You know, that's so... You know, that's the 60s. Come on, let's, it's, you know, the 80s now. Let's, you know, I was so young. I couldn't believe I said that. And he looked over at the gal who was doing makeup. He says, you, come over here. And she was wearing a little top that had stripes going across it, white and turquoise. And he said, you, switch shirts with him.
Oh my God.
I looked like Philip Seymour Hoffman in Boogie Nights. It was just, it was so degrading.
Yeah, you know, where he comes in, yeah. He comes in with a half shirt.
yeah. I look like, and I don't think I ever saw it because it was so degrading. And at the time, it was directed by Jim Minarski. And I think in those days, that's what was available. And I told all my friends, I'm playing a character part. I'm playing a gay guy. And I was so in the closet, and it was so frightening to me that I would get pegged as that, and I wouldn't, and no one would ever work. But no one else saw the movie. It starred Robert Tessier from The Longest Yard, the bald guy. And this is how bad the movie was. His eyebrows, they put these fake eyebrows on him, and they kept changing in every scene, which was really weird.
Of course, nobody was paying attention to that continuity. I think Mazursky...
Obviously not.
Wasn't he involved with Roger Corman?
Oh yeah,
in that whole,
it was that kind of movie.
Yeah,
at the time it was that kind of movie. Yeah, but I had a manager, Catherine James, who was also Quentin Tarantino's first manager, I think, or one of his first, and she was quite a go-getter, and she knew him, and we all went to lunch one day, and he just gave me the part. It was only one line. It was really ridiculous. And I was so excited. I had no idea. I was gay dude number one.
And all the way from, but listen, Jason, all the way from there to Paul Giamatti. I mean, that is an amazing run.
Paul Giamatti?
Paul Giamatti, wasn't he with you in Birth of a Nation?
No, that was, you're thinking 12 Years a Slave. I actually played what people would call the Paul Giamatti role in The Birth of a Nation. My film starred Nate Parker, Armie Hammer, Penelope Ann Miller, Roger Granvers Smith, Coleman Domingo, God, the late Esther Scott, Asia Naomi King. I mean, so many wonderful, wonderful actors.
I know,
and
look at that. I mean, that's why I was cool. You know,
I played a white heterosexual Christian plantation owner in 1831, and that film came out in 2016, and it played on HBO for 2 years after it came out in the movie theaters for a couple months, and then it lives on Amazon, so you can watch it there for a couple dollars. And if anybody wants to see it, it's a great film about history, and it's about the life of black abolitionist Nat Turner. So it's a film you guys should definitely watch if you're a big movie buff and if you like brilliantly directed films.
I do. And, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jason.
Coleman Domingo today got nominated for a Gotham Award for a film, Zola, and he's in it. He's on Fear the Walking Dead, and Anjanou Ellis, who was in Lovecraft, and Asia Naomi King, who used to be on How to Get Away with Murder, and Roger Gendry Smith from all the Spike Lee films, and Gabrielle Union, of course, everybody knows her, and my pal Jason Warner Smith, and just so many wonderful. And then Chieko, I forgot, Inoko, I'm saying his, I'm bastardizing his name so terribly, forgive me, he's on La Brea now.
That's amazing. So let me ask you this. Okay, so you were from the Bronx. You were born in the Bronx, correct?
I was born in the Bronx, but I've moved there to Los Angeles when I was 9 months old. So I've lived in Los Angeles most of my life until 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. And so you go to LA now. Did you, when you were there, when you were a kid, is being an actor something you had set your sights on?
Oh, yeah, I was, I guess I was 9 or 10 when I did my first play in my temple. I was going to Hebrew school, and I did a Purim play, which is a Jewish holiday, and I played a slave, and I ripped up one of my mother's sheets. And from then on, I caught the bug, and my mother has been upset with me about that sheet ever since. And then I went on to do Pinocchio, and I played Geppetto, and I talked like this because my grandparents talked like this, and I was able to do the accent. I don't even remember. And then I did school plays. I did community theater. I did Parks and Rec plays. And then I started studying acting professionally when I was 14. And when I was 16, I helped produce and act in my first play, Lanford Wilson's The Shadow Box. And then when I was 19, I did my first job on television in Life and Times of Eddie Roberts, where I played a ping pong player who was on pot. And that's how I started. Yeah.
Wow. Well, and like you were saying, I mean, you were taking anything you could get because that's where you wanted to go. So how do you go from,
you know, starting to build a TV and film career to stand up? How did that work?
Well, I had this manager, Catherine James, who said that she thought I was funny and I should do stand up. And in the 80s, comedy was really a big deal for people who were goofy, and she thought I was funny. And I decided at the time to try it. And I went and did it, and I went to the comedy store, and they went to a comedy class, and they ripped me apart so bad that I didn't do it again for 2 years. And then I went and auditioned at the comedy store, and I was made a non-paid showcasing regular, which is the worst you can do where you're allowed to work there. And eventually I became a regular and got my name on the comedy store, and then I became a regular at the Laugh Factory and also the Improv and all the clubs in the area.
When you were starting out in comedy, had you come out yet?
Oh, God, no. I didn't come out until 1993 on an episode of The Geraldo Show. It was called Unconventional Comedians. There were five of us on, all different types. Paul Mooney was the angry black man comedian. My good friend Sheila Kay was the woman comedian who'd lost a lot of weight. And my friend Kathy Buckley was a hearing impaired comedian. And then Sandy Church, who since passed away, was a little person comedian. And I was the gay comic coming out. And I came out on the show. And it literally changed my life.
And was there a big reaction to that? I mean, did...
Yeah, I became one of the first people, not the first, but one of the first, to headline mainstream comedy clubs across the country, everything from the Funny Bones to the Improvs to the Comedy Zones, everywhere. And I worked headlining comedy clubs for literally 25 years until around 10 or 12 years ago. I stopped doing clubs, and I started doing theaters and more single night events. Like, can I plug some events?
Sure.
Would that be okay? I'm actually doing a show this weekend. I'm going to be at the Merch Theater. I think it's the Merck Theater, in Temecula, California. On, let's see, what date is it? Here it is, October 23rd. I'm doing two shows at 7 and 9 p.m. They're close to selling out, so if you want your tickets, just go to my website, jasonstewart.com, S-T-U-A-R-T, Stewart, and you can get the tickets. There's a link there if you live anywhere near Temecula. And then on Sunday, the 23rd, it's the 24th, rather. The 24th, I am doing a show at the Coachella Valley Improv Comedy Festival. I'm doing a show on the Sunday, the 23rd. I won it several years ago, this comedy festival's Best Comedian. And they're supposed to have me back last year, but COVID, so they had me back this year. And I'll also be teaching a class, that's why it is on the 23rd, on the business of show business.
And this is what I was saying, you know, when looking at what you do and what you've done. You've done stand-up, and you've done some very, very, very serious work, like Goliath and that type of thing. But also what struck me was your role in Tangerine, which as a film buff, as a kind of trying to be an independent filmmaker, I thought was amazing because, it was shot on the iPhone 5. Can you talk about what that was like, you know, working in that kind of situation with the director, with everybody, you know, filming this with an
iPhone? Well, shout out to Sean Baker and to Chris, his co-writer. Just a big, big shout out to them because their new film, Red Rocket, they just got nominated for Best Screenplay for the Gotham Awards, which is really sort of cool, I think. And I had met Sean Baker. I guested on a show called Warren the Ape. It's a show about it's what I call a straight boy comedy on MTV about this puppet. And I played a Bernie Madoff kind of character. And it's all so bizarre, and I'm talking about it out loud. And I did this scene in it, and I became friendly with Sean, And I kept calling him, wanting to meet with him, wanting to work with him, because I'd seen his other films. I saw Starlet, and I saw one that I really loved, which was one of his early films called Prince of Broadway. And I tried, and he never would meet with me. But he talked to me on the phone. He always returned my calls and da-da-da and everything, but he never would meet with me. So one day I got a call from his producer saying, there's a part for me in this film he's doing called Tangerine. And the guy said, let me send you the script. I said, don't. I said, please go ahead, send it to me, but I'll take it. And he said, don't you want to talk? I said, no, I want to work with Sean. I'm dying to work with him. And I was offered the part. I played the manager of the, I guess, Hamburger Mary's, where the lead character, Alexandra, comes to sing her song. And I have two elongated scenes that are edited, you know, to be throughout this whole thing. The film is very highly edited, so I'm in the film around 10 minutes.
And I tell you, go ahead.
No, it was a great part for me. So, and the year before I had done Love is Strange with Fred Molina and John Lithgow, Marissa Tomei, and I had one scene in it. It was an Ira Sachs film, and I went to Sundance for the first time with the film, and that was really exciting. And then after that, the second year I went with Tangerine, and the third year I went with Birth of a Nation. So I went to Sundance 3 years in a row with films. So it was sort of really exciting. It was 14, 15, and 16. And just to, you know, also be clear, Sean writes these films with Chris Bergoch, Bergoch. I'm always saying his name wrong. But they write together, and they wrote Red Rocket, which is now just came back from Cannes and just got nominated. So I think that's really exciting.
But it is, and I mean, to see the groundbreaking, you know, methods that Sean used with the iPhone, it's really kind of changed the way that we can do film.
Well, they kept saying that anybody could do this, and I said, no, anybody can't do this. You know, it's not true. Anybody can't do this. He does it because he's gifted. And he has a great script with Chris, and they're incredibly wonderfully gifted, brilliant writers. And it's magic. It's almost magic. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it really opens the door for people like myself, like you, who have an idea, have a script, have a story, and that it's not such a huge thing to have a production when you can limit it down to an iPhone or something like that. Because, I tell you, I watched Tangerine, and I was just completely floored.
When I saw it, I thought, because if you notice me in the film, you notice I'm yelling a bit. And the reason is because I thought, oh, my God, they're not going to see me. They're not going to hear me because I'm on Santa Monica Boulevard. The buses are going by. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to be in another film where I'm not going to be seen, heard, and they're going to cut my dialogue. I'm going to be cut out. And I don't want that. And da-da-da-da-da. And I just, was completely floored when I saw the film because the actual sound in the film, the sound design of the film is completely another character in the film. The music is another character in the film. It's just extraordinary.
It is.
Completely
it's
extraordinary.
Amazing. I went to film school in 1992. And if anybody ever asked me now, well, should I go to film school? I would probably say no. Because back then, I mean, we were still cutting on film. We were still shooting with cameras.
Yeah, but you know what film school really is about more than learning. It's about connections and it's about networking.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
And that's what you're really paying for, is you're paying to go to school to be connected to people.
That's exactly it. And that would be the only reason why I would say so. But, I mean, at that time, you know, we were shooting and cutting on film. There was no way for any of us to get our hands on a camera or a Nagra or anything like that with sound equipment because it was too far out of reach. But now with everything out there, it's I don't want to say simple, but it's a heck of a lot more easier to gather together a really quality film because the equipment they have out there is amazing.
And, you know, I was thinking to myself, were you a little apprehensive when you saw
Yeah, I was like, that's why I was yelling. That's why I was making sure my head was turned a certain way. And I've been working in movies long enough to know where the camera is. But it was so tiny. He had it on a broomstick with a lens in front of it. And they had this, it's like a broomstick handle, and then the iPhone, and then in front of the iPhone there was a lens. And then they had this really big light, one light that somebody was carrying that looked like something that was an overhead light at some tacky office. And then the DP, of course, was brilliant, you know. And I was really lucky to be in that movie.
Well, it is a monumental movie in the sense of what it's brought about and what can be done. Real quick, my name's Tony Taylor, and you're listening to Be Unique Unscripted. I am with the very talented Jason Stewart. We're talking about his filmography. We're talking about the films he's been in. And you're invited to join the conversation. All you want to do is call 516 area code 418-5651. Again, that's 516 area code 418-5651. All right, Jason, now let's talk. You were working there at Tangerine, and then you move, or I believe it's after. Yes, it is.
People can call in? That would be great.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me what that number is, and I'll put it on Facebook.
Right, it's area code 516.
516.
418.
418.
And 5651.
Okay, everybody hear that? Call that number. Let's see who's
listening.
And
they can talk to you live. They can talk to you live,
yeah.
Jason. I got to tell you, I was looking. I had a chance to take a peek at 10 Attitudes. 10 Attitudes.
Oh,
and,
God. 20 years ago.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. It has one of the funniest.
And I actually started on the film in 1999 or 2000. I mean, that's how long ago.
And I mean, it has this really rough feel to it, but I mean, some of the scenes are hilarious. And when you go into the days showing it, you don't mind if I play a clip from that.
They get it from the radio? Okay, go ahead.
I think it has one of the funniest.
I haven't heard this film, and I can't even tell you how many years.
Well, I want to say, please excuse if it sounds bad. I kind of stole it.
No, go ahead, please.
Let me see. I'm hoping this is it.
Josh has three loves in life: food, Streisand, and love. This is Josh, my best friend. This is me. I'm Brandon. I'm going for my MBA at UCLA. In 5 years, I'll own this town.
I just came by the house before I went out to Palm Springs.
Ow! What the hell is going on here?
Sober. Sober.
Would you just get out of the way?
In West Hollywood, bad news travels fast.
Were you the one that just got dumped?
Josh had it rough in high school. Sometimes he still has it rough today.
This is a crazy town with crazy people. I just want to go home to Cleveland. I want a guy who's sweet, sexy, smart.
For a man who was just blown out of a 10-year relationship, Josh was in surprisingly good spirits. He was dumped, but I was determined to do something about it.
I'm going to bet you that I can find you a guy in 10 days.
And what happens if I don't find a guy after 10 days?
You can go home.
But we had to get him ready first.
You can keep the jacket, but you kind of have to live with the sweater. I mean, that's kind of very 84.
Josh wants more than a one-night stand. He's looking for love, but most of all, he just wants to be appreciated.
Oh, my God. He looks like a serial killer. He looks like somebody from The Sopranos.
I'm coming from fucking, like, out there. I mean, I don't even, like, there, right there.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from, man.
If Blink-182 found out that I was dating other people, that would hurt my chances of ever being in a date then. So.
And he's the bass player, 27. not gay, so there's like a, you know, speed bump. But I can work all that out.
Okay, I want to stop it there. That's from the trailer.
Oh, God, I can't even, I hardly remember this.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you something, Jason. I love that. He's not gay, but that's kind of a speed bump.
That was the late Scott Kennedy. Oh, wow. He was great. He passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
Wonderful
that.
Wonderful comedian friend, yeah.
Oh, man, that is great. Now, let's talk about – now, when you were working on that film, were you – did you want to go ahead and move from acting to producing and directing? Was that
Oh, no. I didn't direct it. Michael Gallant directed it. He was one of the head executives at ABC, and I had met him in an empowerment workshop called the Experience Workshop in the 90s and early 90s. And we had been friends for a long time. And he directed it. We co-wrote it together, the story, but the actual film was completely improvised.
Yep. I just wanted to mention that I you did in total improvisation on that script. Moving through those 10 dates, did either of you know what you were going to say to each other or talk about?
Each scene was lined up of what would happen, yes.
Okay.
But it was open on how we'd get there. This is before Curb Your Enthusiasm, before all the stuff. I loved improvising, and I thought, it was an experiment. I wanted to do a film called Dating, and this is what happened. We opened at the Philadelphia International Film Festival. We got distributed by Aristocal Home Video. We won awards in Barcelona and in different places. I can't remember. I have to look it up. But yeah, on my website it says everything. On my resume page, I think it's where all the stuff is. But it was, you know, it's over 20 years ago, so it's hard to remember.
Exactly right. But, I mean, when you were shooting it, though, I mean, this was over a few years? Or what you were saying?
We did it on weekends. It was totally an experimental thing. It was going to be a short, and then it turned into a film because we had so much stuff. And I had done some things before. I had done some interstitial programming called, Jason Stewart Mania.
So from there, I mean, I know you didn't direct it, but then you started writing. Did that kind of spur, I mean, working on that short and progressively moving on, when did you decide that you wanted to go ahead and direct and produce?
Well, I've only directed two things. I directed a series in 2013 called Mentor with Paul Elia, and that's on Amazon now. As my series Smothered is, which I co-wrote, co-produced, co-created with Mitch Hara. And just so people know who are listening to this, we are actually having a GoFundMe campaign, and you can go to smotheredtv.com. We're trying to raise money for the DP and the sound and all the head of the department heads. And we're going to do our second season. And you go to smotheredtv.com. You can watch the series either on Amazon if you have it or for free on Reverie, I think you can watch it, the gay website, Reverie, or YouTube. There's three different ways to watch it. So it's 7 5-minute episodes, and we were nominated for the Queer Tea Awards. We were up for an Emmy nomination for that. We were on the list to be nominated. It's been very successful, so we're now involved in doing Series 2. And I also directed a short film called Like Father about this older Jewish man whose son wants him to forgive him before he dies. It was a drama. And that I won Best Actor, I think. Yes, I won Best Actor at the Silicon Beach Film Festival, I think. I don't know if I was nominated or won. I know, but I was also nominated for Hank, so I can't remember.
Yeah, but you were nominated, and that was important.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And let's see, moving. I mean, you've done the web series Mentor, Like Father.
Those are the only things directed, but I produced quite a bit. I produced things. And I produced because I wanted to create my own stuff. I wanted to be able to act with talented people. I wanted to do things of quality, you know, and I wanted to do things that were creative and different. Colorblind casting, like Father, my wife in it and my son are black, but we never discuss it. It's not an issue.
What year was that? Like Father
was probably around 4 years ago, I think. You know, because of COVID, I get so confused.
How did you handle COVID?
I live in Palm Springs now, and I was home in my Palm Springs apartment. I live in Palm Springs around 80% of the time. In L.A., I live 20% of the time.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Do you mind if we take a break for a minute or two, and then we'll come right back?
Sure. Let's go to a commercial,
okay.
Right?
Yeah, I'm going to go to commercial. Once again, my name is Tony Taylor. You're listening to Be Unique Unscripted, and we are with comedian, actor Jason Stewart. We'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome to Transformational Tuesdays.
I'm sorry, Jason. Let me go back to that. I apologize.
What do Dragon Ball Z and a vandalized
and
rock
trying,
have
trying
in common?
To do it. Okay, hang on one
by
second.
By Anna
East we'll
and commercial. Mary Brotherton. If you think the animated
All
series
right, here we
Dragon
go.
Ball Z has nothing
one.
In common...
Oh, I'm having
Learn
a time
why
here.
People around the world listen to Be
more.
Unique Radio.
There we go. Let's try one more. There we go. Come on.
With summer right around the corner, so far things are getting back to normal. Everyone is feeling hopeful again, stepping outside, catching up with friends and loved ones. Just an overall feeling things are turning out for the better. At Be Unique, our overall goal is to inspire everyone as well inform with stories from around the globe, how unique individuals are impacting their community in positive ways. And Be Unique is with you every step of the way, making sure 2021 will have a positive impact and inspire the next unique generation.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to Be Unique Unscripted. I am here with comedian, actor, Jason Stewart. Hey, Jason, we have a call. I'm going to go ahead and put them on, and let's see what we have to see. Hello, and welcome to Be Unique Unscripted. I'm Tony, and who are we speaking with?
Yes, this is Bob calling in from Orlando.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing? I'm looking at your bio, Jason, on the Be Unique website, and it mentions the birth of a nation.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, is this a parody or any relation to the 1915 D.W. Griffith?
No, the film is taking back the title of the film that caused over 1 million people to go back to being a member of the Ku Klux Klan. It's about black abolitionist Nat Turner, and the film is available on Amazon to watch for a couple dollars. We talked about it before. I can tell how it's a really interesting story about how I got the part, Bob. I had heard around 10 years ago that they were doing giving people tax breaks all around the country. So I contacted agents all around the country, and I had a bit of credit, so I was able to get agents, but none of them sent me out until I got with an agent in New Orleans, my agent there, Brenda, and she sent me out on a number of things, and then she sent me out on this, and I actually got the part. And I had to go to Savannah, Georgia, to meet with the director on my own dime. And I got there, and I stayed in some shit motel and drove rent a wreck. And was in a hotel where it looked like, I don't know, the They looked like there was somebody by the pool that was going to kill me in my sleep, and some woman was pregnant, was smoking, hanging over the balcony. I drove my little car to some mall where they had rented a storefront, and I went into the audition, and Nate Parker was there, and I was in the parking lot saying the N-word over and over because I played a plantation owner in 1831, and I wanted to make sure that I could do it because I'd never said the N-word before except maybe in my car when I was listening to Snoop Dogg and just regurgitating the lyrics, I guess. And so I'm doing my audition. He says, thank you very much. I go home. I thought, oh, I did a good job. That was great. But I'm never going to get the part of a plantation owner in 1831. I got home. My agent called me and said, how's your day going? It was my agent's assistant. And I said, it's going fine. She says, well, you got the part. And I said, well, what part? And she said, well, the part of the plantation owner. And I just started to cry.
Oh, jeez.
And I just could not believe it. And I said, don't lie to me. And she said, no, it's true. And then my life changed artistically. And also as a human, it sort of taught me about white privilege for the first time, way before it became in vogue. And I was doing a press line, and this very cute blonde woman said, how do you feel about all this? How do you feel about Nat Turner and what's going on and Oscar's so white and this and that? And I said, well, what I do is I take off my shoes. I put on the shoes of my black brothers and sisters, and I shut up and I listen, because I think that's what you need to do these days. When there's that many people who are expressing their feelings, you need to have respect for them, and you need to believe what they're feeling.
Well, so this would be more like a docudrama type of program?
It's a dramatic film. It's a dramatic film. I mean, certainly it was in 1831, so there's no way to know anything for real or for sure.
Right. Well, I'll have to look that up.
It's available on Amazon. And feel free, if you want to donate any money to our series, Smothered, go to smotheredtv.com.
Okay.
There you go.
All
Bob,
right.
How do I know you, Bob? How do we know each other?
I know Tony.
Oh, wonderful. Well, how wonderful for you to call in on
the
third show.
And he mentioned this tonight that you were doing this, and so I thought it'd be interesting. And when I saw the Birth of a Nation, I said, I got to ask about that.
Oh, wonderful.
Well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's good having
you. Okay. Bye, Ben.
For a minute, moving away from the film and from your stand-up, you've really taken a serious turn in working in with the homeless and working with SAG and AFTRA to get the LGBT community recognized. You want to speak a little bit about that?
Well, for years, my best friend is Alexandra Paul. Most fans out there know her from Baywatch or all the Lifetime movies where she was being chased or stalked or being the Virgin Connie Squill in Dragnet. And she's my best friend. She's like my sister. And for years, when I lived in Los Angeles, I fed the homeless in Santa Monica, and that's how I gave back every Thursday night when I was in town. And I did that for years. And then during COVID, I gave money to America Feeds, because I think the worst thing we could happen to anybody is not having any food to eat in this country. And this country is so wealthy. How we can let that happen is beyond me. So that's where I put some of my extra money from unemployment and things. When they were giving us so much money, I gave away a bit of money to them. Also, in terms of it's funny because today I was talking to the head of diversity at SAG. I am the national co-chair, along with Tracy Godfrey, of the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA LGBTQ Committee. I created it in 2015, I believe, or maybe was it 14 or 15? 15. And the president of, I guess not the president, the CEO of Screen Actors Guild AFTRA is Duncan Crabtree Ireland, and he had called me on the phone, and I had been at that time faxing the diversity department, because that's what we did in those days, and nobody responded. And then one day he called me on the phone, and he said, I'm the lawyer. And I said, lawyer? I said, great. Well, because I was in this movie called A Day Without a Mexican, and they have not paid the residuals, and it's been sold. And he said, Jason, that's not why I'm calling. I said, oh, why? He says, we want to do your committee. So Duncan and I created this committee together, and I've been the national co-chair since 2015, so it's around 17 years.
Wow. Now, is this kind of like a response to, let's say, an actor like, you know, Anthony Perkins, who was, you know, hiding his homosexuality, you know, all through his career?
Well, certainly but not. It didn't come from that. What it really came from, the reason they called me was because, there was an actor on Grey's Anatomy who had used the F word to T.R. Knight and on the set, and then he said it again when they had done, I guess, when they had won a Golden Globe for Best Series. And people were just, you know, trying to figure out who to call, you know, for that, and they didn't have it. There was no committee. They had a committee for black actors. They had a committee for Latin actors, for seniors, for people with disabilities, everything you could think of, but there was nothing for gay people. And there was no way to handle this situation. So I said, you know, so at that time they decided to committee. I wanted to do it because I had been going to Outfest, which is probably the biggest LGBTQ film festival, for years, and I had met all these out actors, and I realized they were all scared and uncomfortable, and they didn't know what to do and whether they should be out and how they were going to handle that, and I wanted to give them a place to be able to, I guess, but they didn't feel like they were alone. I guess that was one of the things. They didn't want to feel like they were alone.
And somebody to go to, talk to, and that could make a difference in what they were working on and how they were working on. We are at Be Unique Unscripted. If you want to call in and talk to comedian, actor, Jason Stewart, the number is area code 516-418-5651. That number again is area code 516-418-5651. Jason, we have a caller on the line. I'm going to go ahead and put them on for you, okay?
Oh, okay.
Hello, and you are with Jason Stewart.
Hello, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I could not let the night go without speaking to you and just saying hello. The event that I had overbooked myself on is still going on, but it's winding down. So I came out here by the street where you can hear a lot of traffic, and I just wanted to say hi, make sure that Tony was treating you right. Is
I hope
he?
So.
Yes. Why would you think he wouldn't?
Well, you know, Jason, like I said, those work release programs are really helpful here in Florida, so, you know.
No, I know that Tony was a little nervous about debuting without any crutches.
Oh, you're a friend of Tony's.
I am Mary Brotherton, the founder of Be Unique Radio and Be Unique.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I'm
wonderful.
The one you've been emailing back and forth.
Oh, okay. Okay,
but,
great.
Yeah, and I heard a little bit before Tony let me into the show, and I just want to say kudos to you for what you've done for the community. I mean, it means a lot to me, personally.
Thank you very much.
And, yeah, but I don't want to take up much more of your time because I know it's almost time for the show to wind up, and I want Tony to do his thing,
but I just wanted
to call in real quick and say hello.
Well, thank you so much. You're really lovely.
You're
Mary,
really
thank
welcome.
You.
You're
thank
welcome,
you.
Tony. We'll talk later.
We'll
right.
talk
Bye
later.
Guys.
Okay. You got it. Hey, Jason,
Bye-bye.
We have another call. I'm going to go ahead and take it for you.
Okay.
Hi, you're on the air with Jason Stewart. Hello?
Hi. Yes?
Oh,
you're
Dina,
live with
hi.
Jason
Stewart. Oh, fantastic. Jason. Oh, amazing. Amazing,
hey,
amazing. So
Dean is the writer, producer, filmmaker friend of mine.
Hello.
Yeah. I always love an opportunity to talk with Jason. So interesting, right? What a genius.
Absolutely.
What a comedic genius.
Absolutely.
Mind blowing.
Well, thank you.
When is season two coming out? I want to know. When
season two of Smothered is in pre-production now. And as
Amazing.
We said before, if anybody wants to donate, what all they have to do is go to smothertv.com, and there's a button there that says donate on GoFundMe. You can donate $1 or you can donate $1 million, whatever you want.
Looking for $1 million, though.
Dina was one of the first people to see the series and become a champion of it. And that's how, sort of how
Love
we connected.
So,
yeah.
So I was
tell people, Dina, about the series. Tell people about the series.
It's just about these two, I think codependent, a couple that say they want a divorce, but can't seem to separate. It's a lot more difficult than you think it would be. But Through the Mask is just love and hate and fun. And I mean, the first season with the wonderful idea to have the therapist, just a different therapy. Oh, and then at the end, I love everything about it. I've seen it 100 times. The way you decided to do the poster, I'm obsessed with the poster.
Oh, the poster
is
us after we got arrested for trying to rob a bank because I had not paid our taxes.
Yeah. It's so great.
Amazon...
And I fortunately actually know what season two is about, which I won't never spill the beans, but when I tell you, I couldn't breathe. My head was hitting the top of the counter as I was reading it. I couldn't breathe. It was so funny. And I did donate to season two because I do it in all seriousness and all kidding aside, think that you and Mitch are just, you know, comic geniuses.
Let's say that again. Mitch Hara is my co-creator, co-writer, my co-producer on this.
He's just so funny and so out there in such a great way. Such a great way.
Well, gosh, Dina, thank you so much for calling in, and I'll call you later about your video.
I wanted to ask real quick, how has it been? How has it been working with Amazon?
Oh, for me? Honestly, difficult. They do everything by email, so they don't discuss it with you. There's three different tiers on Amazon. There's shows that they buy, there's shows that they make, and then there's shows that they put on their platform in which you get a percentage of. I'm on the percentage thing on that. And we originally were on Amazon where anybody who had Amazon could watch the show, but now they're charging people I think $11 or $12 to watch the whole series, which I think is a bit much. So on smothertv.com, if you do have $12 and you don't care, then please watch the show that way. If you don't, you can watch it for free on YouTube.
Okay. Well,
we put it up there. It's also on Reverie, and it's also on Pause in Europe.
So do you think, though, that what we're seeing – with the TV industry and the film industry, is it going to shift over completely to streaming, you think?
Well, I think it already has.
You think
the movies being in the theater now is a secondary thing. I mean, you know, who knew people would watch television on their phone? I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard of. And now I watch things all the time on my phone.
You're exactly right. And
yeah,
if you find
10 years ago, if you would have said that to me, I would have said, no, that's not going to happen. But now I know, you know, certain movies are coming on HBO Max, and I'm watching them there. I just watched The Soprano prequel on there, and I watched, you know, you're watching things, and you know a month later, if you miss something, it's going to come on Max, which on HBO or Amazon or Hulu, one of the things. And what's really great about that, the great part of it, about it is that if you don't live in an area where independent film or non-Marvel or DC comic films, which they, you know, think are, there's nothing wrong with those films, but everything goes into those films. Everybody wants to be in them because they put the most money behind them. And they don't do that with other films. So, you know, other than those films, if you want to see other films, you know, you can't see them a lot of time because they don't come, or they come and go so quickly.
Right, and I think what I've noticed and enjoy with Amazon and Netflix is that the movies have now become like almost reading a book. You know, you have this extensive background that they're able to explore, and you have this show that can move through all these different episodes, you know, instead of having to wrap it up in an hour.
Definitely.
Instead it can build. You know, I think what I understand is a lot of the directors that were doing the small films, the more intimate films, are moving over to Amazon, moving over to Netflix, moving over to that area, because there's more freedom to do stories than having that Marvel or DC epic that has to come out and has to gross $100 million in a week. And, you know, it really has opened up a whole new way of finding those independent films and finding those films that you want to see that have a great characters, great story, but they unwind. Instead of it, you know, MTV cross cuts, fast, wrap it up. No, these shows unwind. I've got
things that came out recently. I'm in a film called Immortal, and it's four segments about these four different people who just can't die, no matter what happens to them. And I play Joe, this private investigator that deals with spyware, and it's one of my favorite parts I've ever played. You can watch me on episode 6 of Amazon's show, Goliath. I'm opposite J.K. Simmons in my scene there.
Right.
So it's really exciting that I get to do these things. I was on Love, the Judd Apatow show on Netflix. I was on Real Rob Schneider's show on Netflix. So it's given me opportunities to work in different places. I work with Keanu Reeves in a series that Peter Stromar starred in first called Swedish Dicks, which was a comedy, a dark comedy that was a co-production with Sweden. The biggest Swedish comedian starred in it, and Pop, which is this place where Schitt's Creek started. So,
love Schitt's Creek.
A lot of opportunities I had because of all this streaming stuff and because of cable. So it's very exciting.
Well, I think, and that's what I'm saying. I think that the filmmakers that want to continue making serious films, character-driven films, movies that unwind, are all heading over there because it seems to be a lot more freedom and a lot more embrace of independent film. And Jason, we have about
The only bad thing is that I think that you're, you know, films like Nomadland, which I would have rather seen in the theater. I've seen it twice. You know, I think you miss something because it's meant to be seen in a theater.
And I can think of Denis Villeneuve's version of Doom that's coming out. I can't picture watching that film on TV because of the way it looks so epic. I mean, it has to be on a screen, you know. But I think that...
Or we're just going to get bigger and bigger screens in our house.
Hey,
I think that's what's going to happen, too. I think it's going to be really cheap to have a TV that's the whole size of a wall.
And remember, I mean, it wasn't just that long ago that you were thinking to yourself, there's no way I can watch a film on a phone. You know? So everything's changing. And I think that, I don't know. I mean, after this COVID situation, you know, the theaters are really struggling. I don't know if... It will be, I think the trend will be like they've done with, you know, HBO Max has done with bringing, you know, the theatrical films to the streaming service. And that might, you think that might just overtake people going to the theater?
I think it already has.
Yeah.
And I think we have to change the way we pay people because of it. Because now, again, only certain people get to make a lot of money. And make
right.
a living. And now we're talking about just making a living, but this is a much longer conversation. So,
oh, yeah.
But, yeah. But please, everybody, watch my series, Smothered. Go to the website, Smothered TV. If you want to know anything about me, you want to connect with me on social media, go to jasonstewart.com, S-T-U-A-R-T, Stewart, and you can contact me by social media or on the contact page through my office. Modern Artists, you know, and my PR assistant person will get everything to me. You know, I also have a book out called Shut Up, I'm Talking, which is available on my website and on Amazon and also from the publishing company. And I have a new comedy album that came out last year called I'm the Daddy and I Have Candy, and that's also available on Spotify and Amazon and all that stuff and everything you can get on my website. And I thank you so much for having me on the show. And
I really appreciate your patience with me. And it's definitely been an education.
You did great.
And well, thank you. Thank you very much. You got to start somewhere. And like I said, I have a 50-50 chance, and I'll find out when I speak to Mary. But your story is very inspiring, especially to a person like me who's still trying to get their feet on the ground with independent film. And I can see where you can start and where you can go. And, Jason, you have come a long way. So thank
I'm
you
doing
for all
my
that
best
you've done.
To stay in the game.
Hey, thank you for all you've done. It's been a pleasure. Have a great night.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, everybody.